Hey, you guys, I'm Bill Stevens. I'm the lead pastor here. I've been fighting a cold, so I have that deeper voice now that I've always wanted. I don't have the dinosaur voice from Toy Story anymore. I've got a nice, deeper voice now. It is so fun to have you guys here. For all those of you that are new, man, I love it that you're here. And we hope that you actually connect with somebody. We want this to be a place we've always said that is more than just friendly people. We actually want you to make friends. And so, if you've been coming for maybe just this last month or maybe even since Easter, will you go out and talk to John over in the Connection Center so that he can connect you with somebody else? Because it is really hard to do church without at least getting to know a few people along the way. So we love it that you guys are here. You kids that are in the room, we love it that you're in the room. You guys, I keep going back to that to your spaces that you're going to have in the fall. You guys, we're building out bathrooms back there. Bathrooms just for you. Nobody else will go to those bathrooms but you guys. You don't have to walk along. You don't have to go this long hike from the tire center down to the bathrooms. It's just for you. That's how good we're doing with this construction, man. Bathrooms just for the kids. So we love it that you guys are in here. I unlocked the doors this morning, early, and as I'm unlocking the doors, I could see a reflection of the mountains in the distance, and I said, what's that? And I turned around, I'm going, it's the mountains, the same mountains we see every day, but sometimes we forget and we don't see them. And I just thought in that moment, I thought, man, God is reminding us, I've made this day, and I've brought you here. And are we expectant for him to do something in our lives? Do you know that as we dig into this word, he's speaking to you? So maybe you didn't come here with any expectation, but today, will you just sit up and say, God, what do you got today for me as I worship you today? Because he's got something for us. We're going to dig right into what we're talking about today because we're in a series that I'm really, really excited about. Let's go back 3 or 4 weeks, Easter, okay? At Easter, we celebrate Jesus' life and his death and his resurrection, his ascension into heaven, the fact that he has breathed life into each of us because he says death doesn't have the final say. And so we celebrate all that at Easter. That's Jesus being the Lord of our life, okay? Well, John and I talked about that, and we said, what if after Easter we do a series on the things that tend to fight for being the Lord of our life? What if we do a series on the things that say, okay, if you're saying Jesus is the Lord of our life, what if I present this? How about if this takes that spot at the top instead of God as on the throne as the king of our lives, that there's something else? The Bible calls these things idols. Okay, I love what Tim Keller calls them. Tim Keller was a pastor in New York City. He recently passed away, but before he did, he wrote a book called Counterfeit Gods, and that's his version of idols, counterfeit gods, and I love that. He says it's the empty promises, he says, of money, sex, and power. That's just three of the options, and the only hope that matters. He's saying these counterfeit gods. I love what Jackie said. When I was talking to Jackie about this, and she said, you know, you have to be able to recognize the real from the counterfeit, and sometimes we don't. Those counterfeit gods that promise of something. He talks about money and how there's a promise that that's where happiness is going to be, but we know that you can easily have a lot of money and still not be happy. But there's so they're empty promises that can't be filled. God never has an empty promise. His promises are always filled. But for some reason, we tend to allow these other gods to take that seat. And so we're talking through those things, and we thought, we're going to take a shovel full and dig deeper to even some of the subtle ones, okay? I am super pumped about these next 2 weeks, because I believe these subtle gods that we put at the top, that these can be, they're so subtle we don't recognize them. But they do take the place of God. And in a lot of ways, they are the reason why our faith can be such a roller coaster of sometimes we're at a high, but sometimes we're at a deep low and going, God, where are you? Sometimes we're saying, God, I see you, you're right there, and I'm worshiping you, and I'm following you. And other times you just go, I don't even know if you're even here. Why do we ride that roller coaster? I think it's some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about over these next 2 weeks. See, in Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews in chapter 10, he says, He says, he gives us the hall of fame of faith, of people of faith. He talks of Moses and Abraham and these people that had courage and had faith, and they took steps, courageous steps because of it. And then in chapter 11, he says it was because of this faith that it allowed them to do the things that they were doing. And it was this definition of faith. It's Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. It says this. It says, now faith is a confidence in what we hope for and an assurance of what we don't see. That's his definition of faith. Well, as we sat in this and I looked at that passage, you're going, okay, if that's the definition of faith and we ride a roller coaster faith where sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not, maybe we're missing something in that definition. Confidence, maybe we're missing confidence or hope or assurance of what we don't see. Something is awry in that definition that's part of the reason why we sometimes have the deep lows of faith. So over the next 2 weeks, we're talking about some of those things. Next week, you guys, oh my gosh, we got a gift next week. We get to hear from the most beautiful, the smartest person in this entire church. Miss Humdy, it's not you. It is, I'm sorry. My wife Jackie is gonna be preaching for us next week. I cannot wait for that. She is the wisdom behind anything that I say. She is her passion for Jesus, her care for people. I cannot wait for Jackie to come up and preach this next week. She's gonna take on two of those things. She's gonna take on the hope and of what we don't see. She's gonna take that on. Because sometimes for us, what we do is we say, I need to see. I need to know. If I only knew the next step, then I would have great faith and great peace, right? I've worked with college students for 20 years. How many of them would say, if I only knew what I'd do after college, man, then my faith would be so much better. God, show me what I'm gonna do. What major should I have? Who should I live with? Where should I live? We all ask those questions and we say, if you gave us the information, then I'd have peace. I'm waiting on the results from a doc. I'm trying to figure out what's next for our family. Gosh, Lord, give us some information. Jackie's talking about that idol of certainty, that idol of information that says that tends to be put in front of God sometimes and say, I'm gonna find peace there. But what does it look like to actually have peace in a God that sometimes we can't see? So she's gonna take that on next week. I can't wait for her to talk about that. This week I'm talking about the other two parts of that passage: confidence and assurance. See, the people of faith had a confidence and an assurance in who God was, his character, all of who God is. But sometimes we find a confidence and assurance in other things instead of that. And the one I want to talk about today is the confidence and assurance we sometimes have in ourselves. The self-reliance, the times where we say, okay, it's me, I gotta do this, I gotta take it on. When we take that on, sometimes we put ourselves above God. And you're going, wait a minute, are you telling me that I'm a counterfeit God? Sometimes we can be a counterfeit God when we've relied so much on ourselves that we miss what God is doing and how God needs to be in that space. That's what we're going to talk about today. Father, I pray that you would speak to us today. You'd walk through this with us. God, it's going to take some reflection. It's going to take us digging a little bit deeper. I pray that you would help us and speak to us of the times in our life that we just say, it's me, and we need to say it's you. So speak to us today, Lord. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Okay. In 1991, the University of Washington won the national championship of football, okay? We went down to the Rose Bowl, and we kicked Michigan's butt. It was so awesome. I mean, we lost to them this year, but we beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. It was back when they had to vote on who was going to be the national champs, and we were the national champs. We were juniors in college that year. It was a beautiful time to be a Husky fan. Under the pads of the Husky football players was they wore a t-shirt. And the t-shirt said, if it is to be, dot, dot, dot. And on the back, it said, it's up to me. If it is to be, it's up to me. Their philosophy was if every person took care of their job, if it is to be, it's up to me. If I took care of my job and we all took care of our jobs, then we will succeed. And they did, and they won the national championship. My question is that a bad thing? If it is to be, it's up to me. Is that a bad thing? Well, if you do a Google search on self-reliance, you're going to find it's a 50-50 split. Believe me, because I just did it this last week. It is a 50-50 split between self-reliance is a good thing and self-reliance isn't a good thing. When you read about it being a good thing, it talks about, it tells us to assume responsibility to take blames for the things that are our fault. It talks of responsibility, discipline, and confidence. Now, for someone that's raising adult children, my kids have gone out of the house, and they're in their places, except for Abby. She's still with us. And I think about them stepping out of the nest. Wouldn't we want these attributes to be with every one of our kids? Wouldn't we want them all to be responsible, disciplined, confident, take the blame if there's something that it's your own fault? Come on. We'd want that. So it's a good thing. So that self-reliance can be a good thing, but we can also make it an idol. My friend Ryan Ruckerman is a pastor of a church in Austin, Texas, and I heard him talk about idols, and I love his definition of idols. He says, idols are taking a good thing and making it the ultimate thing. It's taking a good thing, like self-reliance, and making it the ultimate thing. Like, I have to be dependent on that. Romans 1 says it this way. He says, they exchange the truth about God and worship created things rather than the creator. Created things rather than the creator. We are created things. I know sometimes we go, no, I think I'm the creator of my life. No, we're created things. And God is the creator. But sometimes we mix that order up and we have put ourselves as the king. And God is saying, I'm the king. I need to be the king in your life. I'll show you how. I'm going to show why. As I did that search, it's interesting when you read about psychologists that come up with biblical principles, and we just call it, well, psychologists are just smart, but it's just biblical principles. In this Huffington Post article, a psychologist said this, while it has many virtues, it, self-reliance, can also rob us of true intimacy and the type of partnerships we desire. Many people are self-reliant to a fault, putting far too much pressure on themselves. They bring self-reliance to a new level because they're unable to rely on anyone. Reliance on others can be healthy and affirming. Okay? Now, what I love about this is it's talking about our connectivity to other people and how self-reliance can pull us away from that connectivity to other people and to God. Remember, God's a relational God. He doesn't intend for us to walk this road alone. He doesn't intend for us to walk this road without Him. But when we're in the heart of our self-reliance, we tend to do that. Here's what happens. When challenge increases, our support system can decrease when we become self-reliant. Because what happens is when challenge increases, it's not that our support system leaves us, we leave it, we leave our support system. It's not that people stopped caring for us, it's saying, if it is to be, it's up to me. And so if it's up to me, I don't need the rest of these people around me, I gotta do this. I got to roll up my sleeves and do this. And what that does is separate us even more. The challenge and the support separate even more. And that chasm between us, that's where exhaustion comes in. That's where personal disappointment comes in, where we're just so disappointed with ourselves and what we're not doing. This is where our evaluation of our faith gets so weak because we're just going, what kind of faith do I have? Because we don't realize that this subtle counterfeit God of self-reliance has separated it out even more. This is where foolish decisions come in our life. When that challenge is increased, the support system is decreased because I have said it's going to be up to me. I love what they say when they say in that article when it says they're pressures. There's too much pressure on themselves. How many of us are carrying a massive amount of pressure in your work, in your home, in your marriage, with your kids, in your school? And then when we add, if it is to be, it's up to me, that pressure just increases. And the unfortunate thing is the more the pressure pushes in on all sides, the more we then say, God, I can't afford to rely on my faith. My faith is fragile and flimsy. I can't afford to rely on you right now. I have to rely on what I can control, and what I can control is me, and that whole idea is a self-reliant idea. That's even saying my faith, instead of just saying, no, I got to rely on God, as that we press, that pressure comes in, we just go, I can't afford it, and it has to be where we go. But some people would say, because what I'm talking about are things that I can't handle, but I try to handle. But people would say, but Bill, what about that passage of scripture that says God will never give us more than we can handle? That's not scripture. That's an actual lie. God absolutely knows you're going to get more than you can handle. He says in this world there's going to be tons of trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world, not you. He knows that there is going to be all kinds of things that are going to press us beyond what we can handle, both in purpose and in pain. We got to recognize every single day, think about how cool this is, you guys. Every single day, God is putting purpose in front of us. Because every single day he's doing the sanctifying work in us, the sanctifying work to grow us more and more like Jesus. So every day he's putting purpose in front of you, and most times when he does that, it's beyond what you can handle. And God knows that, and he wants that, because he knows that there is a spot that you can't do anymore and God can do, and in that gap, he's going to fill that gap. And when he fills that gap, not only is somebody else blessed, but you are blessed and I am blessed, because we now are relying, while I am weak, he is made strong. You guys, next week when Jackie comes up here to preach, this is not what she does. She all along, for 30 years, the times that she has come up to preach for me, she's gone, Bill, I'm going to be nervous, I don't know. And I'm like, Jackie, you are so wise, you're so good with this. And she's going to be nervous. And you know she could easily say, I'm not going to do it. She could easily say this week, Bill, I'm not going to do it, you take it. She might do that this week. But no, she came to me and she said, but I feel like the Lord is putting on my heart to preach and to do this. And so she's putting herself out there in a place that's going to be far beyond what she can handle. But God is going to meet her in that space. If she says this week, if she says, if it is to be, it's up to me for what I'm going to say that's going to transform people's hearts. If she says that, then she's putting it all on herself. And this week will be a hard week. It's going to be a hard week anyway. But it's going to be a hard week. She will come up to preach. She will listen to it afterwards. She will dissect everything she says and every comment that's coming her way. Someone will come up to her and say, that was a lot better than I expected. You know, because I'll get that every once in a while. And you kind of go, what do I do with that? You know, she'll get that and she'll go, I knew it. I blew it. And you go, that's a self-reliant response. Instead of going, no, God's filling that gap and God's going to do something. Not her, he's going to do something through her. In her weakness, he's made strong. And that's why I can't wait for next week. Because in her weakness, God's going to be made strong and we're going to be blessed because of it. Listen to how Paul says it in 1 Corinthians. He says it this way. And so it was with me, brothers and sisters. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. for I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I came to you in weakness and great fear and trembling. I love that. How honest is that? I came to you in weakness with fear and trembling. When we step into the purposes God has put into our life on a daily basis, it will come with fear and trembling. And God says, yes, because that's where now, as I am sitting as the king of your life, now I get to do that work. Come on, if you volunteer in our high school and middle school ministry, I mean, Grant, you volunteered in our middle school ministry for years, and you're like 90. And I mean, he's not. Grant's like 35. How's that? Is that better? When Grant worked with our middle schoolers, you don't think he's fear and trembling as he steps before 8 middle schoolers? They are intimidating. And he steps in there, and what's going to happen? God is going to meet him where he can't do it all. God is going to fill that gap. If you step into a conversation with somebody and, man, you need to forgive them, or you need to ask for forgiveness, or you step into one where you need to confront somebody, or you go to a hospital and you need to care for somebody, or somebody just found out they had cancer and you don't know what words to say. That's so far beyond what we know how to do. And God's going, I've got you. I've got you. Will you trust me? Will you let me fill that gap? Because if you're just self-reliant, you'll probably mess up, and then you'll beat yourself up. Let me fill the gap. Paul finishes this with, my message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with the demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom or reliance on self, but on God's power. He meets us in purpose, and he meets us in pain. See, some of the things we go through, man, it's going to take more than just our self-reliance to get through it. When you're waiting on that results from the doc, when you're trying to figure out, will I ever find love? When you're trying to put the pieces together after divorce? When you're going through the heartache of grief and loss? Those are all things that are far beyond what we can handle. And those are the times that we got to wave the white flag and surrender and say, God, you sit here and I sit here. Will you meet me in the gap? And God's saying, of course I will. I know those things are there. I know this world will have troubles, but take heart, I've overcome the world. See, there's this moment. My favorite passage in Scripture, it's a conversation that Moses is having with God, okay? And they're at Mount Sinai. Moses climbs the mountain. Many of us know this, even if you haven't grown up in church. All you had to do was watch the Ten Commandments. I think it was a 1950s movie, Charlton Heston. And he gets there, and God is talking to Moses from a burning bush. And man, if you go back and watch it, holy smokes, the burning bush, they do a lot better job with CGI. It's CGI, right? Is that what it is? It just looks funny looking now. But Moses is talking to God from a burning bush, okay? He comes up there, and God says, take off your sandals. You are standing on holy ground. That's the first thing that God says to Moses. Now, slight tangent from this. We have to recognize holy ground in our lives, you guys. We got to do a better job of recognizing holy ground. Did you know that this is holy ground right now? As each one of us are leaning in and taking one step closer to Jesus, it's holy ground. A few weeks ago with Easter, people are raising their hands, committing their life to Jesus for the first time. That's holy ground. In a couple of weeks, and we do baptism, and we look at it and we say, it's just a hot tub. It was just a bush. It was just a burning bush, a hot tub. But it's holy ground as people are getting baptized. As some of you that raised your hand might come up here and get baptized, that's holy ground. The kids' spaces out there, I walk through them, and man, I just want to, it's holy ground. Kids are going to be putting building block pieces of faith together in those rooms. That's holy ground. We got to recognize holy. It's one of the things that in the Catholic Church, they recognize a little bit more. Growing up Catholic, man, when you came into church, for all you Catholics, what's the first thing we do? Genuflect. You go to a knee, and then you go into the pews. Why do you go to a knee? Because we're recognizing it's holy ground. This is holy ground. And so Moses is going, God says, Moses, take off your sandals. You're coming into holy ground. And then he says, here's what I need you to do. I need you to lead the people out of Egypt. You talk about a purpose beyond what Moses can do on his own. And Moses recognized it. And the rest of this conversation was an entire conversation of self-reliance. Moses says to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God says, I will fill the gap. I'll be with you. And Moses says to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers have sent me to you. And they ask me, what's his name? What should I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're going to say to the Israelites. I am have sent you to me. Moses asks a really good question. What if they don't believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? Come on, God. I'm going to go back and tell them you spoke to me through a burning bush? Come on. If I came to you guys and said I was walking down the street and God started talking to me from a burning bush, you need to go to another church. You'd think that. You go, what? What are you talking about? Moses is going, what are they going to say? And God is just shaking his head going, come on. I'm going to meet you in those spaces. They're not going to believe. Yeah, they might not believe, but I'm going to meet you in those spaces. Moses says to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. And God is going, don't you think I know that? Don't you think I know that? You think that that's a surprise to me? Like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry I put you in that place. I didn't realize you stink at this. God's not doing that. He knows our weaknesses, every one of them. And he's going, I get you. And I might put a purpose in front of you that directly relates to your weakness. Because when you are weak, I am made strong. And so he's looking at Moses going, man, I can't wait for you to step into the place of your weakness when you can rely even more on me. And then Moses finishes and loses the battle because it is a battle of self-reliance. He says, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send somebody else. And that's what we say too. It's a battle. It's a battle. Both with purpose and in pain. And you know as well as I do, sometimes we're losing that battle. And we're exhausted. And we're beating ourselves down. And you walk in with no confidence. You walk in with no assurance. Because we don't realize that subtly under it, we've had to put our confidence and assurance in us. And it's tiring. Now, I talk about this and I tell you this because I know it. This has been my biggest battle in my life. And I wanted to take some time this morning to tell you a little bit about where I'm at and what I've been going through and what's happening in my life right now. So as many of you know, I was an athlete in high school in baseball, basketball, football, and golf. I played all those sports. But you guys, I had zero talent. Zero talent. I couldn't hit a jump shot. I couldn't hit the side of a barn with a jump shot. I was terrible. With baseball, in my senior year, preseason, I got two fastballs and just laced them into the outfield for base hits. And then someone threw me a curveball, and I am diving into the dugout for every curveball thrown at me. And so I couldn't hit a curveball, and so I was horrible, horrible as a hitter. But here's what I knew. If I worked harder than anybody else, then I could play. And so, especially with basketball, if I just worked harder on defense than anybody else, it's up to me, I'll get that playing time. And I got to stand there on the court when we made it to state, and I'm looking around at all the fans that are there, and I'm going, this is as good as it gets, and I'm in the middle of this court, and it truly was, if it is to be, it's up to me. I'm just gonna work harder and make it happen. That's what I did. I went to the University of Washington, and I said, if I would just work hard. And I thought, I'm going to go to Wall Street. I was good with numbers. I'm going to go to Wall Street. I'm going to be a stockbroker on Wall Street. And I applied at Shearson Lehman, and they turned me down. And I took that turned down letter, and I framed it. I did. I framed it. And I said, I'm going to show these guys. I'm going to pretty women this thing. I'm going to go to them later and say, big, big mistake. Watch this. And I'm going to, you guys that are younger than 45 or so, you have no idea what that reference is. But I'm just going to work harder. And I did. But then I went to a college ministry. The guy named Denny Ryberg was running, and it was a 600 or 700 college students sitting on the floor of a gymnasium. And that's when I discovered Jesus in my life. And Denny then spent a lot of time with me personally and talked to me about, there's one thing about saying yes to Jesus, another thing about saying yes to Jesus as Lord of my life. And so I started to learn that. And I started realizing that it's okay to work really hard. We need to work hard, but I need to make sure that it's not me in that place in the ultimate spot, but that God is the Lord of my life. For the next 30 years, I've tried to do that. And sometimes I win that battle, and sometimes I'm losing that battle. I come here to Colorado, and I'm doing the college ministry here, and sometimes I'm winning it, sometimes I'm losing it. When I first got here, they said, here's an ice cream social on the campus, and you're gonna pass out stuff that say the annex on it. That's our college ministry, and hopefully some people will come by. And I said, heck no, I'm rolling up my sleeves. We're going to give 26,000 water bottles out on the first day of campus to every single student that walks on campus, and they're all going to have information about the annex. I'm rolling up. If it is to be, it's up to me. And then you soon realize, no, if it is to be, it's going to be up to him. In fact, that's the t-shirt we need to make around here. If it is to be, it's up to him. 14 years later, we start Ascent. And man, I was in such a good space of faith because I'm going, if it is to be, it truly is up to God. And Jim and I together started Ascent, and every single moment in those first 7 years was moments of just going, God, you've got this. The number of times we'd stand right over here on the side and cry as we watched God at work in this space. He brought in people. You know how many, not people meaning just filled seats, do you know how many startup churches want leaders and just can't find them? And God provided this place with so many godly people that say, we've got this. God's working through us. The money that came in to help us get started, the building that we ended up with, it was a season of just, for 7 years of just going, man, God is fully out in charge. And Jim and I are just following wherever he goes. But in year 7, COVID hits. And every pastor in the country had to go, oh no, what do we do now? And we all, that habit of going back to, if it is to be, it's up to me, that started again. And you go, no, we can't give into that habit, and it started again. Then Jim decided it's time for him to go. And it was the right time for him to go, and I plotted him in that, it's time for him to go. Jim left, and I felt the weight of this church on me, and so... If it is to be, it's up to me. You know, like I said, you know, when that tension and everything tightens in, it's easier to just get to that conclusion, I've got to rely on me. That's what I started doing. But I'm fighting it, going, no, God, if it is to be, it's up to you. We had staffing changes. We had to make a really hard staff decision. And in that, just, there were some people that were really hurt. And, oh, God, it's me, that's me, that's me. That's what I put on myself. Then the George Floyd murder happens, and we stood very strong on racial justice and racial reconciliation, and some people said we went political. And we're going, no, we just went gospel. But because of that, you felt that because people started leaving, and you're going, oh, God, if it is to be, it's up to me. Wore masks, maybe for some people too long, but we just want to be good neighbors. If it is to be, it's up to me. I got to fix this. So I'm fighting that. Fighting it. No, this is not up to me. And then a fire happens. We lose our home, and the community is all over the place. My family is hurting like crazy. And I say, if it is to be, it's up to me. I got to care for my family. And then there's 60 people in our neighborhood that's houses went down. If it is to be, it's up to me. I got to rally our people. And then 28 families in this church houses went down. If it is to be, it's up to me. And then a bunch of you that were displaced in a whole community that we had to do triage with. If it is to be, it's up to me. And I'm saying, no, Lord, it's up to you. In fact, I got this tattoo. I'm not a tattoo guy. But I got this tattoo that is the Emet of God, that is the faithfulness of God. And someone said, put it on your shoulder, it's cooler there. And I'm going, I don't care about cool. I just want to be reminded about the faithfulness of God. but I'm still finding that I'm losing the battle. It crunches in the habit of self-reliance is winning. I finally went and got a blood test, and the blood test came back with super high marks on heart attack, oranges and reds on heart attack. And I'm saying, this is literally killing me. And so I'm going, what do I do? And I came back and we talked to our board. Our board is such a careful group of people. And you know, the first question is, am I going to quit? And I'm going, heck no, I'm not going to quit. No way. And they said, well, maybe it's time to take a break. Maybe it's time to get a reset. Maybe it's time to take a sabbatical. And I'm going, sabbatical? I haven't taken a sabbatical in 17 years. And the reason why I haven't taken a sabbatical is because if you don't get one, I'm not going to get one. So I'm not going to take a sabbatical. Plus, for self-reliant people, that sounds like a, you don't get to play defense out there in basketball and then all of a sudden say, I'm tired. I'm quitting the defense. I'm going to take a break, coach. You just keep sucking it up and keep doing it. But then I started realizing if we're on this journey of faith, confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we do not see, if I am doing a whole lot of, if it is to be, it's up to me, how in the world am I shepherding this church well? And so so I said, okay, let's do a sabbatical. And we started talking about when. How about May and June and July, or June, July, and August? And I said, well, you can't, because we're moving into the kids' spaces, and we're moving into the auditorium, and we got a building campaign. We can't. And someone came up to me one night and said, Bill, maybe this is the perfect time to take a sabbatical, because your church gets to see that it's not up to you. It's what God is doing, and they will be the ecclesia, the movement of the church that will move into those spaces, and they aren't dependent on you to do those kinds of things. And that's a good point. And so I surrendered, and self-reliant people, that word is a hard word, surrendered. I surrendered, and I said, okay, we'll do it. So this summer, Jackie and I are going to take a sabbatical. We're going to take 3 months. We'll go back and visit family in Spokane for a little bit and see grandkids. Then we're going to go to a beach for a while. We did a search. The cheapest VRBO between Santa Barbara and Hawaii. Every single place. And we found the cheapest one. I mean, there'll be bed bugs for sure and all kinds of crap in there, but we're going to spend some time on the beach, because for me, when I go on the beach, especially in the Pacific Ocean, I look at the waves coming in, and that's all the responsibilities, that's all the weight, that's all the stuff, that's our budget, that's our monthly finances, that every month I'm asking Amy, how'd we do this month? Because for 10 years, we've been month to month. It's all the stuff, but behind it is a vast ocean of God's provision, love, and grace. And I need that reminder. I need that rest. I need that reset. And so we're going to go walk the beach for a little while and come back. And I can't say I'll be all better, but I'll be back ready to keep walking this in this battle and this challenge for all of us to make sure that God gets to be on the throne and that he is king and that we are not. Now, I got one more thing I want to share, but I know that just by saying that, you've got questions. Well, who's going to preach if you're not going to be here? John is going to preach. You guys, I've talked to Jim Candy. He's coming back. I've talked to Chris Sturgeon. He's coming back. I've talked to Mo and Aisha. They're coming back. I mean, it's going to be a reunion of ascent as some of these guys come back this summer to preach, along with a lot of our very gifted people here in our church. Some of you will say, yeah, but I've been to churches where someone takes a sabbatical and they never come back. I'm coming back. There's so much that I want to see God do in this space. We have been on this journey, and there is zero, zero, zero part of me that says I want to leave this journey. No way. I'm coming back. Some of you might say, yeah, but are you telling me everything? there's always something else, and we start creating narratives. I don't have any more narratives. You guys know me. I'll be as honest as I can. I got bad blood results. I got to do a reset. That's exactly what it is. And then some of you say, well, who's going to lead us? I don't. In 30 years, I have not been a part of a more capable staff than the staff I have right now. I have not. The leaders in this room, our prayer team is our leaders of our church. Our board cares for every part of it. The leaders that we have in here, you guys that are making things happen, it allows me to say I can do this because God's got this and he continues to bless this church. And so you guys, will you put that stuff aside, okay? So that's what's happening. We can talk about it if you want to talk about it later, because this part right here is the most important part. This is the last part that I want to say, okay? This is the most important part. There was a writer in the 16th century, a guy named Tom Owen, and he asked a question to all self-reliant people. He said, what's our duty in response to God's love? What's our duty in response to his love? All self-reliant people listen to that and we go, oh, I know what my duty is. It's I have to do this. I have to do better quiet times. I have to serve better. I got to give as much as I can. I gotta check my all that I'm doing. I got to make sure. It's all I. That's what we do with self-reliance. But God says this, but Tim Owen says this. He says, here's how I want you to do it. First, I want you to rest. Rest in God's love. Whew, that's a hard thing to do. Rest. Then he says, I want you to delight. Delight in the unending, unconditional love that God has for us. Rest, delight. He said, then worship. Thanking him for what you're discovering and resting and delighting, worship him. You guys, psychologists would say that you can't be thankful and anxious at the same time. Those neural pathways don't cross. Worship him and then obey him. But for all of us self-reliant people, we do just the opposite. We obey first and press it hard and say, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? What do I got to do? And then we worship and we hope, I'll worship because I'm supposed to. And then we might delight and it shocks us. Oh gosh, I kind of delighted in that worship. And then we'll rest. Who am I kidding? We won't rest. We don't know how to rest. And so we'll go right back to obey again. And he's saying, flip that script. Rest, delight, worship, obey. That's our duty to God's love. And he says, and get this, you guys. Jesus is the author and perfecter of our faith. Self-reliant people like me will say Jesus is the author and I'm the perfecter. I got to perfect this. He is telling us. He's saying, no, I am the author and I am the perfecter. And I will put you in places where the purpose I put in front of you will be far more than you can handle. And I will put you in places and you will find times where your pain is far more than you can handle. And you will be exhausted and you will beat yourself up. Unless you let me sit on that throne and be the king of your life. I'm gonna rest this summer. I'm gonna go on that beach and rest. And I know that you guys don't get 3 months, you might get 3 minutes. Today, will you rest? And then tomorrow, will you start it up again and rest and delight and worship and then obey? My prayer for you is my prayer for me this summer. This is what I'm going to be praying for you all summer long, okay? All summer long, this is what I'm going to be praying for you. It's a prayer that Paul wrote to the people in Ephesus. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. It's not us enlightening it. May the eyes of your heart be enlightened by God, in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people and his incomparably great power for all of us who believe, who surrender, who put him on the throne, both in purpose and in pain. Amen.